people that don't know it are the smaller companies who rely exclusively on their insurers to provide them with the protection they need when something like this happens. And it's a little bit, when you do that, you are starting from behind the eight ball and you are playing catch up every step of the way. The only time that the good guys, the defense attorneys, the people who want to protect businesses like me have an opportunity to be ahead of the curve is in that.
That is Steve Setliff. He is one of the good guy attorneys that fights for small businesses. If you have a small business, if you are a franchisee or a franchisor, or you're considering going into business, what he's talking about right there is how to preempt some of the issues you can expect, because issues will come up that you will need to address at some point in the future. And a lot of these issues can be addressed on the front end before you're behind the eight ball, as he says. This episode is absolutely a must listen for any small business. You're listening to the CloseTheDeal.com podcast. I'm your host, Yul Smith. Now let's dive in. Steve, I welcome you to the CloseTheDeal.com podcast. And I know you are in Richmond. And first question. So first of all, welcome to the show. And man, it's good to see you.
Good to see you as well, Yul, from frigid, freezing cold Richmond this morning. It's about 14 degrees this morning. So we are having unusually cold weather.
Yeah, it's not that cold in New Orleans right now. It's about, we went down to the high 20s.
Cold enough.
But I spoke to a guy in Utah the other day, and he had 4 feet of snow, and he turned his camera so I could see the window, and the snow was going sideways. It was a whiteout. So we
should. Yeah, that's, I always look at that and think, that's the good Lord whispering in your ear that you need to move in any event.
What, if you're taking a client out to dinner, all right, in Richmond, where are you taking them to do business to close the deal?
Yeah, I'm a kind of a traditional guy when it comes to that. There's a great steakhouse here called Buckheads that has excellent steaks. They got a great wine selection. The atmosphere is just right. It's very casual, but also very elegant. Very nice place. Not too far from where I live, and folks that I take out there seem to really like it.
All right. What's your favorite dish there?
I'm a New York strip kind of guy, man. Yeah. I'm the simple New York strip kind of guy. All the everything else comes a la carte. So I'm big on the sweet potato, the mash that comes with it. It's good. I like it.
All right. Now, my favorite question. Who or what are you grateful for that helped you get you where you are today?
My dad.
There you go.
My dad was probably the hardest working guy I've ever seen in my life. My dad dropped out of high school when he probably was 14 years old to help his parents on the farm. And then I spent some years working in a paint factory before he decided that he wanted to become a plumber and get into plumbing and heating. So he worked for several years doing that and then went out and opened his own business. And it was watching the things that he went through operating his own business, which have in large part guided me to this day, being responsible for everything that happens in the business, understanding that it's your business, it's your name on it. You're responsible for the quality of it. You're responsible for the client service of it. You're responsible at the end of the day to make sure it's done. I learned all that watching him. And I also learned all of that just being involved at by helping him. I worked for my dad the time I probably was 8 years old, right through the summers until I went off to law school. So I spent a lot of years turning wrenches and cutting pipes. And when I wasn't in particularly good favor with him, digging ditches, which is still the bane of my existence. I'm dig a damn ditch somewhere. But he just was a hardworking guy. And he used to, once he retired, would call me up and pick up if I was having a bad day, tease me about, ask me how the day was going and how everything was happening with the day. And I'd tell him it was tough and we were working really hard. And he'd laugh because he thought the idea of working hard using only a computer and a phone and talking all day was laughable because he worked outside, no matter what the temperatures were, hot or cold or whether it's raining. I learned a lot from him and I'm grateful for everything he showed me and provided for me along the way.
No doubt. He did a good job. What made you decide to become a lawyer? And we'll talk to you.
Because I didn't want to be a plumber. That's the simplest answer for all that the great corollary that I got from working with and for my dad was just that there had to be a better way to make a dollar. And I'm a little flip when I say that. I've always, as you probably know, I've always been a big fan of the law. I've been very much drawn to it since I was a very young man. Something my mother, most people don't know this, while my dad was working as a plumber, my mother was a legal secretary. My mom had ideas about me maybe chasing the dream of being a lawyer, probably perhaps before even I did. Mm-hmm. But that got me interested in it. And I grew up watching To Kill a Mockingbird and Perry Mason. And those things had profound impact on me and became something that I very much wanted to do. And once it became clear that it wasn't going to be a rock and roll singer or a Baptist minister, the next best thing probably was being a lawyer.
I love this. The pecking order.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right. So now you've been in your firm. Tell us a little bit about your firm, your primary, what do you all do? What areas of practice do y'all do? And then we'll dig into how do you protect someone starting into a business? Or maybe it's even somebody who's been in business for a while and they haven't thought about the obvious stuff. But yeah, that's a little overview.
So I've been very fortunate. I started with a larger law firm here in Richmond when I graduated from law school. Hard to say out loud now, but 37 years ago, amazing. It's been that long. Started with a big law firm, very much of a silk stocking, blue blood Richmond law firm, which was an interesting fit for me, having grown up in Southside, Virginia, the son of a plumber and a legal secretary. And I very quickly gravitated toward things in that law firm that let me get outside. And while not maybe do plumbing things, allowed me to be outside and be around what I consider to be ordinary people, because I like that. I like talking to, quote, ordinary people. I'm not the biggest fan of being stuck in a room full of other lawyers. Our practice at that law firm involved representation of a lot of railroads and a lot of trucking companies and a lot of utilities. So that became truck drivers, railroad employees, and linemen. And man, that's a crowd that I really like. I was at that law firm from 1987 to 2006 when I decided I was going to start my own practice and be somewhere where I can do things the way I wanted them to do. Because by that time, the law firm with which I had started, which had been about 100 lawyers when I started, had merged with an even bigger law firm. And we were up to about 600 or 700 lawyers at that point. And that is way more bureaucracy and lawyer stuff than what I was really interested in. So I started in 2006, opened my own shop with me and one other guy and a young lady who came out with us, who was our legal secretary, office manager, and paralegal simultaneously. And we started putting the practice together from that point on. Now we're up to, I just hired our 16th lawyer the other day, and I would anticipate we're going to be hiring our 17th and 18th lawyer in fairly short order. Our practice focuses very intensely really on three different things. We do a lot of three different kinds of work. We do a lot of employment, consultation and litigation. We do a lot of commercial consultation and litigation. But the real workhorse in the firm is what I call our transportation work. And that's work that involves the anticipation of counseling for and defense of casualty claims, whether those are claims involving third-party injuries or workers' compensation claims or substantial property damage. And that's really where we make our bones. We do a lot of that, not here, not just here in Virginia, but also across the Mid-Atlantic and, in fact, across the United States.
And that's how you and I met when I was head of the Carolina Loggers Association. Yeah. And the work that you've done, you're one of the good guys.
Yes.
I say that all the time. There's a few lawyers around the South. I'm from New Orleans that have made their living leveraging the insurance system, I should say, and trying to be polite. You may not be so polite.
I wouldn't be, but.
But you help the good guys out. You help the working guys out. And I know all the loggers that we worked with certainly appreciated every bit of that.
Yeah, it really is. And without putting too much of a moralistic stamp on it, it really is, because all the ads that you typically see on TV are the attorneys, quote, helping injured people. The folks who get help most prominently are the attorneys who are doing the helping in that circumstance. My job is, on the other hand, I'm there particularly, not just the big businesses, because I represent lots of big Fortune 500 companies with respect to claims that get made against them, but also do just as much, if not more, with the smaller guys, the guys who may have 5 employees or 10 employees who have been involved in some type of accident that in every material respect is existential to their existence. It's literally bet the company litigation based upon somebody suing them and coming after them for what they've got, for what they have spent their entire life trying to put together and to make. And as you can tell, I'm very passionate about that. I understand as the son of somebody, I can remember in the days watching my dad, the terror that would be in his heart if there was some suggestion that something that he'd done in some 300 unit apartment complex was going to cause substantial damage to the complex, or somebody had fallen, or somebody had got hurt as a result of something he'd done. That's the kind of thing that puts a small businessman completely out of business, and something that I take very seriously in trying to help folks to anticipate and defend those claims.
This is what I'd love to do with you today. I'd love to, we're going to have to come back and do another segment just on how to protect yourself regarding transportation.
Yep.
With all the commercial trucks that are out there, every single business we know is more vulnerable than they even begin to realize if they're not protecting themselves. But for somebody going into business, let's talk about the business side. How does somebody who's been in going into business or has been in business for a period of time, and maybe they've been just lucky, they haven't had a claim against them yet. What are the areas, small business, where the blatant mistakes that they make, and how do they fix them?
Yes, I would tell folks who are going into business to establish a relationship with two folks right up front. And really, three things that I would suggest that people do right up front. One is you probably need a good accountant, somebody that you can rely upon to help you navigate the ridiculous tax code that business owners have to be able to navigate to do the things that they need to do. The second thing is to figure out what professional association covers whatever it is that you're doing, because being able to go and have some fellowship with other folks who are in a similar line of business and talk about common problems is absolutely invaluable, because there are going to be things that come up on a day-to-day basis maybe your accountant is not going to be familiar with, or maybe even your lawyer's not going to be familiar with. So that's a very important thing. And then third thing is establishing a relationship with a lawyer, somebody whom you can trust and who you understand will always act in the best interest of your company, whatever that is, whether it's an employment law question, whether it's a commercial law question, whether you got a casualty event, whether it's how the business is organized, whether it touches upon any of the myriad of state and federal regulations now that impact almost every business that's out there operating, somebody that you can talk to make sure that you're doing it right. And those, if I had to identify three things that would help folks up front get around most of the problems, those are it, because that really touches upon a lot of the things that we otherwise talk about.
What are the areas you see the most claims in that you can help protect people from, or share with them, so they don't need a lawyer? Obviously they can have their lawyer, but what areas do you see where people need to pay attention to more?
So the first thing people should pay attention to is how they're configuring their business, right? Are you running, it depends on what your assets are. Do you own your building? Do you own the land upon which your building is set? Do you have operations that are separate? For example, are you brokering any type of work? Are you running a transportation arm for any type of work? How do you have all those configured from a business standpoint? Lots of folks, and there are good reasons to do this, lots of folks operate all that under one silo, one business. And there are goods and bads for doing that, reasons for doing that. But you at least should consider upfront, does it make sense to segregate or to silo your business off in the different operating units, no matter what size that you have? The second thing I really emphasize to people, and this is why I suggest that almost everybody needs a relationship with a lawyer, particularly somebody that does trial work and understands what's going on in the litigation world out there, is to fully appreciate all the risks that are really incidental to running a business, no matter what kind of business you run. If you've got a fixed place of employment where the general public is going to be showing up for appointments or for meetings or for any reason, or you have people making deliveries, or you have vehicles on whatever, there are going to be risks incidental to all that. There are premises liability risks. There are risks that are associated with potential employment law claims. There are risks associated with all kinds of different things that folks need to anticipate and make sure that they are solid on. And in that vein, the thing I would probably mention is making sure that you have a relationship with an excellent insurance agent who can provide you and direct you in the things that you need to do to make sure you have adequate coverage to protect your business.
Okay. What's a good case study you've seen where a person got in trouble and probably should never have gotten in trouble for something obvious? I just want people to see, I want people to realize, because I've heard you speak so many times, and there are just so many, it's so obvious to somebody that they think it's not a problem. It's almost like they're blinded by it.
Yeah, so the problem most people have is they apply a commonsensical approach to a particular, to an incident, right? I see this over and over again where somebody will slip and fall outside of work, a customer or something, that because they had their arms full, they're carrying too many packages, or they trip over a curb. Or one of your, if you have commercial vehicles that you operate incidental to your business, one of those vehicles gets rear-ended at a stoplight, or somebody blows to a stoplight and hits you. So people apply this commonsensical approach and think, well, it's not my fault. I'm not going to worry about it. I don't need to worry about conducting a thorough investigation here. I don't need to worry about taking pictures or maybe getting statements from folks or doing the things that need to be done, because they think that the guys that they see on TV, the plaintiff's lawyers, are going to apply the same template. That's not the case. In the world that we live in, particularly in states where there is no bar, contributory negligence bar, that is, there's no bar that says a plaintiff who is does something wrong can't recover. Most states don't have that. Most states proportion responsibility to the wrong, potential wrongdoers. So in almost every circumstance that you can conjure up, there is a possibility that a claim can be made associated with an incident. Yeah, I've got this case across, I do a lot of work for a lot of resort industry properties. I've got this very case across several states where people getting out of cars tripped over a curb trying to walk into the hotel. A perfectly obvious curb that had been there for 100 years. But the allegation is it wasn't painted yellow. It wasn't as obvious as it should have been. There are curbs across the street that are painted yellow. You could have painted this curb yellow. And while I may have some responsibility for this, it's not all my responsibility. So this broken leg and $100,000 worth of medical bills and this $50,000 of wage loss that I've got is at least partially your responsibility. And then depending upon other factors that could be ginned up in the case, you know, was there some kind of head injury, or is there something that makes the plaintiff particularly sympathetic? That can be the kind of case that can have substantial exposure to it. So what I try to tell folks is to believe that anytime there's an incident, particularly if we're talking about an instance where folks are injured, take it seriously. Know what you need to know to be able to conduct whatever investigation you need to conduct to be able to protect yourself should a claim be made somewhere down the line. It's a big deal.
What's the appropriate way of, to handle an incident such as that? What would you tell the management of a company or the owner of a company how to be prepared to mitigate that from the start?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Yul. And because, again, most people are utterly and completely unprepared for that. And what most people do, if they do anything when something like that happens, is they'll pick up the phone and call their insurance agent and think that it's the insurance company's problem. It's not the insurance company's problem. The insurance company may handle the issue. They may 2 weeks later send somebody out to investigate or take a statement or take pictures or whatever, and they may end up handling the claim, but it's going to be your problem. It's always going to be your problem, because either if depending on how the case winds up, you either get your insurance canceled or the premiums go up out of sight. So it's always your problem. So understanding, and this is why, again, I urge people at outset, have a relationship with a lawyer somewhere in your life, somebody who knows what the game is, who knows what the courtroom game is, who understands what these billboard lawyers and TV lawyers are really trying to do. If you understand that, then you can configure and you can be what I call accident ready. So accident ready is having a checklist, having somebody who's designated, who's going to oversee the conduct of the investigation, knowing when you should implicate or involve whoever the company's attorney is, in addition to the insurance company, knowing who to talk to, knowing what to ask them, knowing what documents that you want, knowing what pictures that you want, knowing what pictures that you don't want. All the kind of things that the bigger companies, I promise you, the Walmarts, the Dominion Energies, the Norfolk Southerns of the world, they know this. And whenever we have an incident on one of their cases, the wheels in motion turn. The people that don't know it are the smaller companies who rely exclusively on their insurers to provide them with the protection they need when something like this happens. And it's a little bit, when you do that, you are starting from behind the eight ball and you're playing catch up every step of the way. The only time that the good guys, the defense attorneys, the people who want to protect businesses like me have an opportunity to be ahead of the curve is in that first 12 to 48 hours after an incident's happened, before whoever has been involved in the incident shows up at a plaintiff's lawyer's office and starts putting their story together.
What should a person say or not say? Let's say the manager walks up to somebody who fell in their store. What should they say or not say?
Never apologize, because, and there's good reason for that. Not only do you not apologize, because if you apologize, that will be subsequently admissible against us in court as an apology and an acknowledgement that we'd done something wrong. But the primary reason you don't apologize is because you don't know what happened, right? You don't know all the details of what happened. So the better thing to say is to simply to walk up and observe whoever's been involved in the accident, look for any telltale sign that would suggest any type of intoxication, whether that's the smell of alcohol, the smell of marijuana, or anything that suggests, or maybe they give you any idea that there's some kind of glassy eyes or anything else going on, and say to the person, are you okay? Is there anything I can do to help you? Is there anyone you'd like me to call? Mm-hmm. If that person will give you a written statement at that point, then I would by all means take it, because that's your first, best, and probably only opportunity to get an unfiltered, unvarnished account from a potential claimant of exactly what happened.
And what about somebody who doesn't have, what do you see the vulnerabilities? That's easy to see, right? Because it's a business, somebody falls, happens every single day. We hear about it in the news. What about somebody who is working from their desk? How do they protect themselves from litigation?
Man, it all starts with understanding the risks, right? So that's what I say when I tell you it's professional associations, and it's your accountant to some extent, but having a relationship with some kind of lawyer, because everybody should be able to sit down and say, walk me through the kind of things where I could have exposure here. Most employers have only a very fleeting idea of the tremendous exposure associated with things like Title VII and employment law claims. A lot of folks still operate in that old kind of command and control structure. Mm-hmm. Yule comes in one day, Yule's having a bad day. The Cowboys or the Saints, let's say the Saints played like garbage this past weekend. You're angry and you walk into the office and somebody says or does something you don't like, then you just fire them. Those kind of split, or maybe there's even additional reasons and you just make a decision that you're going to fire somebody. Mm-hmm. The one thing I have learned as a lawyer is, nobody in this country ever gets fired for poor job performance. People always say they got fired for some other reason. And that other reason can be a myriad of things, because you fall into a protected category and you are discriminatory, or you had unfair practices in the workplace, or a harassment in the workplace. So those kind of decisions that are made in a split second without talking to counsel, checking the site, seeing what your file looks like can result in litigation that goes on 2 or 3 years and costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, both to resolve the claim and for attorney's fees. So again, it's understanding the risk. It's understanding, and I'll move from employment law to the commercial context. Understand that every contract that you sign, that all that lawyerese, legalese in the back of it, all that stuff really means something. And all that stuff can really work to your detriment. And not taking the time to understand what things, provisions that are typically included in commercial contracts, like the payment of attorney's fees in the event of a breach, what that really means. Those are things that can be very harmful to you in the operation of your business. And that's before we even get to the casualty part. The casualty part is understanding, as a business owner, what are you out there really touching and doing on a daily basis? What are the opportunities for interface by either your own employees, which can raise issues with respect to workers' comp claims, or third parties who may want to sue you for something? Are you operating commercial vehicles? Do you have a fixed workplace where people are coming and going? Do you operate something that could spill or expose people to some type of substance or chemical? And just understanding all that and having a critical assessment of it is humongous.
Okay. What about somebody, a brand new entrepreneur starting up, and they don't have a handbook yet? How much legal exposure do they have as they build a team?
Man, everybody should have a handbook. Everybody should have a handbook. This is 2024 now, and law firms have handbooks, trucking companies, logging companies, power companies, railroads. everybody has handbooks now. And the handbooks are a great way just to set out who you are, what your expectations are, and the way you're going to do business. And they're not hard to do. Again, if you have a relationship with even a marginally competent attorney who's working in conjunction with your business, they should be able to help you with something like that.
I'm going to have one more question for, and I think people underestimate how their social media, the employer looking at employees in their social media accounts. How does a business protect themselves regarding social media? Because that could go sideways real quick.
Yeah. So I have very strong feelings about social media as a trial attorney. So I know everybody loves social media and they're off time, they're on time. You know, you're headed to Key West next week and you want to make sure everybody knows you spent the afternoon at Sloppy Joe's. So up it goes on your social media. That's fine. What everybody has to understand, if you're a business owner or you're somebody running a business, you need to know that in the event that if there is some kind of claim that gets made against your business, everything that you have ever put up on social media is going to be fair game. And the bad guys are going to find it. They're going to look at it and they're going to use it in any way that they can to portray you or your business as a bad actor. Most folks now have websites. So whatever is up on your website on the internet, fine, as long as it's accurate, doesn't exaggerate, it's not inaccurate about anything. Having a presence on social media for your business is also fine, so long as it's accurate. You really patrol the site to make sure there's nothing bad on there. The one thing I think that employers do a poor job of communicating to their employees is that not only will the social media for the company and not only the social media for the owner of the company, but any employee who's involved in any type of incident, their social media accounts are going to come under scrutiny as well. So putting up things on their social media account that they may think is, and in fact, may not be funny in every single context. However, I see it a lot in the trucking industry. You've heard me probably use this one before, but I've had some cases before where truck drivers will put up a meme on their website that says, if you cut off a tractor trailer, you're asking for an 80,000 pound suppository. Funny. It's absolutely funny. I've seen it a bunch of times with different drivers. But it's not funny when after a truck driver basically runs over a 78-year-old woman and kills her because she happened to cut him off in traffic, right? That's the kind of thing that juries can get fired up about and the kind of thing that can really work to our substantial detriment. Having enough sense to make sure that I tell people all the time that the best thing that they can put on their website if they insist on using social media are puppies and flowers, because those things are innocuous. Nobody gets upset about puppies or flowers. Once you verge away from that, you really got to ask yourself, is it worth what you're putting up? And how could this be something that ever is used against me?
That's all good advice. It all makes sense. All right. Advice to somebody who is considering going into business. What would that advice be from the lens of a legal professional like yourself?
General advice, which is be ready to work hard, right? There's nothing about going into business for yourself that's easy. Mm-hmm. And embrace my philosophy, which is the boss is a jerk, but I know him, and understand that the buck is going to stop and start with you. And then surround yourself with as many like-minded people as you can possibly surround yourself with. People who are dedicated to succeeding and doing the things that they need to do to succeed. That's just kind of general advice. From a legal standpoint, I'm going to tell people, and again, if it sounds like I'm repeating myself, it's because this is important. It's in the world we live in today, having a relationship with somebody who you know from a legal standpoint is going to have your back, not the lawyer furnished to you by your insurance company, not the lawyer picked out for you by some professional association to which you belong, but a lawyer with whom you have a relationship with, who you can talk about things to, who you can chat about things like employment decisions, or what does this mean in this commercial agreement? Or, hey, we just had an incident over here. Tell me what you think. Those things are invaluable in navigating the world we live in.
Steve, I appreciate it. What's the call to action? Somebody wants to get in touch with you so that they can figure out how maybe they've got an issue they got to address, or they just want to protect themselves going forward. How would somebody get in touch with you?
Sure. You can reach out to me directly at my email address, which is ssetliff@setlifflaw.com. Or our website is even a little simpler. It's just setlifflaw.com.
How do you spell Setliff? So,
okay. It's Setliff is SETLIFF.com.
Setlifflaw.com.
That's right.
All right. Very good. Steve, man, it's great to see you. I appreciate it. And we're going to have you back in the near future to talk about the trucking side, because so many service businesses that we work with in the franchising world and in the private industry world have their commercial trucks, and they are very vulnerable as well. But till then, thank you and appreciate it.
I enjoyed being with you. Thank you.
And that is a wrap with Steve. Folks, I hope you take what he shares to heart. Whether you're a small business or a big business, it will save you. His guidance can save you a lot of time, a small to very large fortune, and a ton of pain. He can help prevent some of those issues for you by addressing them on the front end. And I want to thank you for being part of our community. It means the world to us because we're growing this. And I would ask, I have a favor to ask, please like or subscribe to this channel and share it with your friends, anybody who thinks this message could be important for them, because this applies to the message Steve shared today applies to every single business. Doesn't matter what the business is. And by the way, you know the drill. If you've been listening for a little while, be intentional and make today a great day. Bye-bye.